But I would also say that when charts go straight up, typically they will end up coming straight down. It always worries me when I see charts like cocoa or copper or silver, and the move's already 20 or 30% higher. And now the retail gets all excited. They're pumping their bags, or we're buying calls, and this is it. And, you know, just like it did in 2021 with GME, and the Wall Street bets, it typically ends bad for retail.
We're going to go. Come on.
No. You know what? I should go.
No. I'm going.
I don't think I understand. I have to go. No, you stay.
Everyone, and welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. You can find us on YouTube at The Milkshakes Pod. You can also find us at Twitter at The Milkshakes Pod. The madness part has definitely been on display lately. Brent, the last couple episodes we've done have been a little bit longer. We've done at least three in a row over an hour. We've tried from the beginning to keep these under 30 minutes. We're going to try to return to that. We both have a tight schedule here, so we're going to be forced to do that. But as I interluded at the start here, it's been a bit of a return of madness this week, and some of the things that have been going on that are both fun and silly. But I have to ask before we get into that: Are you a cringe person? Like, do you like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm and like the people like Fail Army, people watching videos of people getting hurt and things like that?
Well, you know what's funny is, typically I'm not, but I love watching Larry David because I grew up with Larry David. Larry David is, you know, kind of a left-leaning New York Jewish, you know, very neurotic guy. My dad was the Midwest right-leaning conservative Christian version of Larry David. And when I was a kid, the cringe drove me crazy. But as I got older, I started to appreciate it. But in general, I'm not a cringe person. But there's a lot of stuff to cringe on. Before I forget, let me just make a point on this, on something. When you said the madness has been on display for the last couple episodes, I thought you were going to reference my plant back here and how maddening it is that this thing just keeps dying, you know, withering on the vine, so to speak. Every episode it gets a little worse. My wife and I actually got in an argument a couple weeks ago about why I have not yet thrown it away. And the bottom line is I'm just stubborn. So anyway, it's on its way out. But for anybody who's not been able to take their eyes off my plant for the last couple episodes, I hear you.
Yeah, well, you had some work done on your property there in Puerto Rico, and so you were staying someplace else. So the plant got neglected, and it just never rebounded. But the reason I brought up the cringe, and we're short here on time, so we're not going to get into this too deep. But I guess there's a bit of a congressional Jerry Springer spout recently, and I'll be honest, this is why I mentioned the cringe. I didn't watch it. I couldn't watch it. Once it started to go off the rails, it was just too much, and I skipped it.
You know what? I did not watch it all the way through for the same reason that you're referencing. Like, it's just too cringe. I did get just a couple snippets of AOC. I got a couple snippets of Marjorie Taylor Greene, and then I can't remember the other congresswoman. I think she was from Georgia, but I'm not sure. But it was definitely cringe. And these are our leaders. This is, you know, why we're, you know, Grant Williams tweeted something. I said, "Bright shining city on a hill," and I thought that was like the perfect tweet. You know, just kind of sums it all up. As you know, these are our leaders, and it explains why we are where we are.
Yeah, and it's our fault, one would say, because we're the ones who keep voting them back in. So, all right, well, let's shift to markets. While it's somewhat in the madness frame and cringe frame, the first thing I would start with is we had the return of Roaring Kitty, which is deep effing value, one of the key figureheads in the GameStop craziness that was 2 years ago. He returned with a meme tweet. MEME, and GameStop ripped, and it's now down 30-40% since the peak of that little euphoria. Any thoughts on the silliness that was on display there?
You know, it's funny because I literally just watched the movie on that maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. There was a movie that was made, I think it came out a year ago, and I typically watch, you know, these finance movies whenever they come out just for the entertainment value of it. And this one wasn't as good as The Bigger Short or whatever, but it did a good job of telling the story. And the interesting thing is I remember that very well, not just because it was roiling, you know, overall financial markets, which it certainly was, but Wall Street Silver tried to get in on the same thing at the same time. And they were trying to do this silver squeeze. And, you know, people were pumping SLV up and saying, go out and buy call options on silver. And I, at the time, and again, this tweet is out there. I'm not just making this up. Like I said at the time, this is going to end very badly for all of you that are chasing this higher. And it did, you know, of course, you know, the retail always gets pummeled after these big run-ups like this. And, you know, we're seeing similar charts of GME. We're seeing similar charts in some of the commodity markets now, too. And, you know, it's a lot of people are very excited about it. A lot of people are very worried about it. But, you know, it's definitely causing some madness out there.
Well, the commodity charts have been really interesting across the board. I think anything in the food commodity space, sugar, I think, is what at an all time low. We had cacao rip higher and then completely crash. It's pretty wild out there. I mean, are you seeing that just as this like sloshing around of liquidity or people just trying to find a place to put capital? What's your take on some of that? Or is that just supply driven?
You know what? It's all of it, John. And here's the thing. I think this is probably a good segue into just talking about commodities as a whole. And so I'll answer your specific question, but I'm going to do it, you know, kind of with the whole complex in mind. And then I'll get into some specific positions as well. Because I think sometimes people have a misunderstanding of my position on these things. And, you know, it's funny. I feel like I have to come on here and explain what I'm really saying because I am on Twitter a lot. I do social media a lot. And when you do Twitter, you're limited to a certain number of characteristics. And when you do a podcast or something, you're typically, limited to one or two sentences. It's hard to oftentimes get your whole point of view across of what you're actually trying to say. And then somebody listens to it. It's taken out of context and they don't really get it. But the first thing I'll say is for literally 10 years now, there is a chart that goes around every January that shows commodities related to equities. And it's at its low. And it is always hailed as this is coming to an end. And we are now going to see commodities rip higher and equities rip lower. And for 10 years, it hasn't happened. That chart just goes sideways or down. Now, I don't make fun of the chart because I don't believe that it's possible. I sometimes will make fun of the people who will use that chart and then be very certain about their belief that now commodities are going to rip higher. And it's not that I don't think commodities can rip higher. My point is always in this stuff is it is not certain. And all you have to do is look at that chart for the last 10 years to know it. We are now seeing this year, we've seen several commodities make not just moves higher, but kind of parabolic moves higher or not even parabolic, just like dramatic views higher. And I think it's related to all those things you said. One, it's related to liquidity. You know, like it or not, there's a lot of liquidity out there right now. Number two, it is supply driven because like it or not, the world is going through this global divorce. You know, supply chains are not working as well as they used to. And not, you know, just from an efficiency standpoint, they're not working as well as they used to. But also now we've got a number of, you know, geopolitical issues that we didn't have 10 years ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago that are affecting it now. And then, you know, it's also, you know, we've got some markets in Europe, we've got some markets in Asia, and we've got some markets in the US. And, you know, typically those prices around the world will be relatively close to each other. And sometimes people will play the spread between, you know, copper prices in London versus copper prices in New York. And we kind of saw that blow out here recently where, you know, where these have, and again, we've seen it in gold, where gold is trading higher in Asia than it is in the US. We're seeing it now in copper. We've seen it in other commodities as well. And so you're getting these dramatic moves. And one thing I would say is a lot of people will say, you know, this is evidence that inflation is not coming down and the Fed is screwed. That is certainly possible. And I would not say that's an incorrect view. But I would also say that when charts go straight up, typically they will end up coming straight down. Cocoa is a great example. So over the last month and a half, 6 weeks, I saw a number of tweets that showed DBA, which is an agricultural ETF. and it was going straight up, and it was hailed as, this is more evidence that fiat currency is dying and you're losing your purchasing power. And they would say, like, the whole complex, you know, commodities are ripping higher. Well, in reality, if you looked at that ETF, the only reason it was going up was about 75% of the action was related to cocoa, and maybe 10 or 20% was related to coffee prices, and the rest had really just gone sideways. So it's really based on two kind of obscure commodities were driving that DBA price higher. And since then, I'm not sure on coffee prices, I haven't looked here this week, but since then cocoa prices have come down like 30 or 40%. And we've seen similar moves in gold and silver recently. Like, gold has had a very big move higher. Silver has had a massive move higher. We can talk about that more in a minute. But the point is when something goes up this quick, it doesn't mean it's going to crash. Doesn't have to mean it's going to crash. But when something goes up really quick, it has the possibility to come down really quick. And so when people, I say this because I think one of the things we try to do on this channel is not just report what's going on, but also try to educate and give a little bit of behind the scenes of what it could mean. Now, could it mean that we're in a new era and that chart that I spoke to at the beginning where commodities dramatically outperform equities is now, you know, front and center? That is possible, but it's not guaranteed. So when you see charts of cocoa and the price ramping higher, and you see charts of copper and the price ramping higher, and you see the price of silver and the price ramping higher, it doesn't mean you should go all in on it. And in fact, you probably would have been better off to, you know, buy it earlier and then now start trimming or selling your position. It always worries me when I see charts like cocoa or copper or silver, and the move's already 20 or 30% higher, and now the retail gets all excited. They're pumping their bags. We're buying calls, and this is it. And, you know, just like it did in 2021 with GME, you know, and the Wall Street bets, it typically ends bad for retail. Now, does it mean it's guaranteed to end bad? No. Maybe this is the beginning. When I see charts like this, John, I do not typically buy at these levels. When you see a breakout, like, as I'll use copper as an example, copper is now at $500. The 10-year average price is around $400. It got as low as 200. It got as high, you know, I think now it's at its highest level in 5 years. But, you know, when we, the, you know, the 400 to 450 level was kind of the breakout level. It got to about 500 maybe a couple of years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine, but then it came back down. But, you know, now it's through those levels. What I would typically do is I would let it go through those levels and then it come back and retest the level that was previously resistance. I typically would let it come back and at least retest that and have that as support now. And the reason I do that is, you know, when I look at the copper chart, it's gone straight up, same as silver, same as cocoa, you know, and we saw what happened with cocoa. And here's the thing is cocoa has severe supply chain problems, and it's very possible that cocoa will turn around and ramp higher. But if you went in and you bought cocoa futures 2 weeks ago when it was at $1,000, and you bought it, when you buy futures, you typically do it with leverage, and now it's at $700 or whatever it is, $600. You know, you took a pretty hard pull down on that, right? And that same thing can happen in copper, and that same thing can happen in silver. Same thing can happen in gold or uranium or any of these things. And so, again, this isn't Brent being bearish on commodities. It's just saying be careful when you're buying something. You know, the sentiment index on these things. So, as an example, everybody knows I've owned gold for a long time. I think it's an extremely important asset. It's at its high now. I think this is its highest close in history. I haven't looked yet, but silver closed at its highest level in like 15 years today. So earlier today, when it was around 31 or a little over 30, or right around 30, I can't remember exactly where it was. I think it was just under 31. I bought some puts on silver. Now, I didn't buy puts on silver because I don't understand the silver story. Listen, we could come in on Monday and silver could be at $50. And I will not be surprised. I totally understand the long-term prospects for silver. But I like to trade both to the upside and the downside. Sometimes people just like to buy commodities and sit there and wait. And you know, in a couple months or a couple years, it eventually pays off and you sell and you bank your profits. And that is a completely legitimate and well thought out and good strategy. And if that is your strategy, that's totally fine. That's not the way I always do it. Now, I've owned gold for a long time, but on silver, I will typically trade it because I think silver is something that you trade or you rent, whereas I think gold is something you just buy and you just hold. But silver has now, it went, has gone basically straight up. We bought puts at around 30 a couple of weeks ago. We sold those when it came back down to around 26 or 27. And now it's back up at 31. And so all the same reasons that I did the trade then, I did the trade now. It's just a short-term tactical trade trying to scalp some money. Now, if you don't want to trade both ways, if you don't want to scalp trades here and there, you don't have to. But my rational for, but if you are going to do that, if you are going to trade both to the upside and to the downside, the times that you buy puts or you short is when it's at its high, when sentiment is at its high, when positioning is at its high, and when everybody thinks they're bulletproof in it. You don't want to go short when it's at its low and everybody hates it. That's when you should be buying it. So my point is that silver now has a huge commercial short position, which if you look back throughout history, that is a very bearish signal for commodities. Copper has a very big commercial short position on it as well. The sentiment now is really high. It's in the high 80s. It's as high as it has been every other time that silver has pulled back or copper has pulled back. The sentiment on copper is in the 80s. So it's higher in silver than it is in copper. And so my thinking is that, you know, I think it's likely to pull back at some point over the summer. Every year for the last 5 years, it's pulled back. So I'm thinking, you know, if I can scalp a few dollars here and make some money on the tactical trade, that's great. If it goes against me, I bought puts. I didn't go short. So I have a limited amount of risk and I know what my max loss is. And so that's the way I do it. So, you know, what I would rather do on silver is because silver has been the $30 has been the resistance for 5 years. Now that we're through 30, if we were to go to 35 and then pull back to like 31, 32, and some of this froth is dissipated and some of this commercial short position has been worked off, then I might buy it there because I don't think anybody has invested in silver because they wanted it to go from 25 to 31. Everybody I know that's invested in silver is because they think it's going to $50 or $70 or $150. And so if I buy silver at 31 or 32 and it goes to 60 and I miss the first two or $3, that doesn't really bother me. So that's the way I like to do it. But again, if you like to trade other ways, that's fine. But what I would go back to is if you're just now getting involved in copper, if you're just now getting involved in silver, if you're just now getting involved in uranium or whatever it is, I'm not saying don't get involved. I'm just saying be careful because, you know, there is a lot of this madness going on. And the last thing I'd say with regard to this, and we touched on this a couple of weeks ago with oil. And I mentioned my friend Michael Every. Michael Every was on a panel with me that when we did the zero hedge dollar debate. And he did an interview a couple of weeks ago, which I thought he just totally hit the nail on the head. And he said, as we move forward in this global divorce and we have these geopolitical tensions between countries, assets and commodities that have strategic or national security implications, you know, governments are going to do things to influence the price of those, either for national security reasons or for political reasons or whatever it is. And so, you know, keep that in mind. If you're just now getting long some of these very strategic, and listen, copper is a strategic commodity. Silver, not so much, but to a certain extent, it could be. Gold obviously is. Oil obviously is. You know, if you think back to 2022, whenever the most sure trade in the world was to buy natural gas and oil, and everybody was absolutely positive it was going higher. And since then, they've gotten crushed, right? It's kind of the same thing with copper and, you know, some of these other things. Now, I'm not saying don't own them. I'm just saying be careful. And because I think the madness, I mean, if governments start putting up roadblocks to either supply or price or who can own them or the taxes involved or windfall profits, then you're really going to see the madness. And so just keep that in mind. You know, certainty is a very dangerous thing when it comes to markets. And I think that's more true now than ever.
You referenced this chart of, you know, the ratio between commodities and equities and how everyone's saying that, hey, it's at this the ratio is at an all-time high or all-time low, depending on how you're looking at it, and that this is going to reverse. And what it ultimately means is that commodities are going to rip through the roof. And starting this question with that reference point, because one of the things I want you to talk about when you answer this is the recent CPI data, the inflation report. And I also want you to talk about something that we've covered a bunch in previous episodes, which is China selling their treasury bonds and the argument being made this time, because I think anyone who tried to make that point the last 3 months got thrown back in their face that it was more a decline in net asset value, not so much that they were, you know, dumping treasuries. And if they were selling treasuries, it was to defend their currency. So to kind of loop this together, and I'll ask my question at the end, you have this commodities to equities chart that's everyone's been hailing as a sign that, you know, the great bull market in commodities is coming. You've kind of just addressed some of that. Then you have the inflation report. Oftentimes, you know, that's been a big theme since last year, the soft landing. You know, the central bankers don't know what they're doing. They're going to blow this whole thing up. Then you have this argument here. There's further proof. You have, you know, China selling treasuries and buying gold. This is the, you know, the beginning of the great gold rally and the end of the dollar. So my question is, kind of combining all of that, does it feel like a mismatch of narratives? Because if the Fed were, you know, stupid and didn't know what they were doing and was going to blow things up and create a recession or even worse, you would have massive deflation, and that would not be good for commodities at all. And therefore, this whole argument that you're going to have this, you know, secular mega bull cycle in commodities is kind of contradicting itself.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So I believe that it's not as simple as, listen, governments are going to remain in their profligate ways. They're going to debase their currency. So all you have to do is go buy real assets and you're golden, you know, pardon the pun. I don't think it's quite as simple like that. I mean, that's obviously, that is the plan. And I think that is important to have that instituted in your portfolio in some fashion, but I don't think you can just go all in on that and not worry about it. Because I think we're going to have more stagflationary effects. I think we're going to have periods of time where commodities gap higher, and you're going to have times where commodities gap lower, just like we've seen. And just like we've just previously discussed. But I do think, due to supply chain constraints and geopolitical issues, I don't think inflation is going to come down as easily as perhaps the market is interpreting, and it perhaps as easy as the Fed is interpreting. I think if inflation does go back to 2%, it probably goes there in a very quick fashion due to deflationary pressures, as opposed to just a slow, easy glide path back to 2%. And when we got the CPI numbers this week, it was a very small miss, but it wasn't a big miss. And some of the stuff actually met, and like the year over year numbers didn't come down as much as the month over month numbers. And we're also now getting, remember, 2 years ago, we had extremely high inflation. And then last summer, it was easy to say inflation was going to come down because the year over year numbers were going to be very favorable. We're now getting into the period of time where they're going to start potentially being challenging again. And so, you know, this idea that inflation is completely under control, I'm very kind of neutral on this. I know the arguments for inflation is going to fall, and I know the arguments for inflation is going to go higher. I'm pretty neutral on it, and I can see it going both ways, but I just don't think it's going lower as easy as those who think it is going lower think it is. And as a result, I think it will be tougher for the Fed to cut rates than maybe the market is interpreting. And I think that's part of the reason why these seven, you know, immaculate rate cuts have kind of gone by the side of the road. Now, as it relates to China, I think this means that they might have to keep selling treasuries. They might have to keep selling treasuries because they still need dollars. And I know people will say they can print yuan for oil. Well, not really. They sort of can a little bit, but these are still priced in dollars. Maybe they're paid for in yuan, but it's still priced in dollars. They still need to use their dollars to operate on the global stage. And, you know, if rates go higher, that means that yields go higher. That means bond prices go lower. And it means that the savings account that China has made in dollars purchases less of these commodities that are now going higher in price. This is what we saw in 2022. In 2022, we saw high commodity prices, largely due to supply chain constraints and the Russia invasion of Ukraine, combined with a strong dollar, versus relative, you know, on a relative basis versus other currencies. And, you know, other countries had to use either their dollar reserves or their own currencies to go buy commodities. But because they're priced in dollars, it costs them even more. And so I think we're probably going to be in the stagflationary environment where sometimes copper is going to be high, sometimes it's going to be low, sometimes oil is going to be high, sometimes it's going to be low. Food prices may fluctuate. But in general, I don't think we're going to get into this low inflation environment that lasts a long time unless it's a result of a crash where, you know, we just kind of get decimation across to all asset classes. And going back to the China selling treasuries chart, you know, there was a lot of times, to your point, you know, they would say, oh, China's selling all these treasuries. And I would come back and a couple other people would come back and say, listen, these charts reflect change in asset value. And because the price of the bonds have come down, that's largely what you're seeing in these charts. Well, the Treasury has a group called the Treasury International Capital Division or something like that. It's called TIC, Treasury International Capital, I think is what it's called. And so they're the ones that produce these reports. The Fed used these reports to then create a new, there's a couple of charts that they put out that show the change in different countries' holdings, and they break down how much is attributable to change in value and how much is attributable to change in actual sales. And so it is true, based on those charts, it is true that some sales are taking place, but it also shows that the change in that very popular chart that shows their holdings coming down is much more based on valuation change than actual sales. The other thing that I'll say, and I've mentioned this on this show before, I've actually talked to the Treasury Department about these new reports that break down the change in value between sales and change in due to sales and change due to valuation. When I spoke to them last, this is probably 4 or 5 months ago now, they were not confident. they were not highly confident that the sales were being accurately reported because it was a new thing that they were having the respondents respond to. And again, you have to understand these are government reports and they're being sent in by it's not a volunteer basis. They have to do it, but it's probably a pretty low priority for these, you know, custodians. And the people that are producing these reports, these are not the CEOs of these custodians that are responding to these surveys. That's probably an intern or some relatively low-level staffer. And what I'm getting at is the Treasury Department admitted to me on the phone that it's very possible that these are being filled out wrong. So it's very possible that even though some sales are being reported, that they're not all sales. But regardless, if interest rates stay high or if they go higher, these charts that show, you know, treasury holdings at other countries coming down can largely be due just to a valuation change. And, you know, the last thing I'll say on this, and then we'll move on, is that we've talked about this before. This is a way that the U.S. can weaponize the dollar. In many ways, U.S. treasuries are foreign countries' savings accounts. But, you know, if they're going to sell those treasury bonds by the U.S. raising rates, it's basically the U.S. making them pay an early withdrawal penalty to take funds out of their savings account. And so, you know, again, the idea that higher rates is uniquely bad for the United States and not bad for the rest of the world, I think you got to disabuse yourself of that idea.
That's definitely emotional abuse for a lot of people. There, the last two episodes, really the last couple episodes, the long ones I referenced at the beginning here, really went more on that windy road deep dive because there wasn't as much activity in the markets, especially the last week, which we titled America is Evil. I think we cover a lot of those fundamentals and market functionalities in that. So please reference and go back to that video to dive deeper into that. Brent, before we wrap up here, you want to share your thoughts on Scottie Scheffler?
Oh, man. The tweet of, I think you sent it to me, the tweet of the day was, it was a picture from what's the movie with Morgan Freeman in Shawshank Redemption, the, you know, and it's Andy and Red are on in the prison yard, and somebody tweeted out that, you know, I'm going to tell my kids that this was Scottie Scheffler and Tiger Woods. So I don't, for people that don't know, you know, Scottie Scheffler is the number one golfer in the world. And he's, you know, he's on this great roll and he's won, you know, four of the last six majors. And, you know, he's an amazing golfer. And apparently at the PGA tournament today, early in the morning, I think, as I understand it, a fan was going to the tournament and was hit by a bus that was delivering other people to the tournament. And as a result, it caused this big traffic jam and backup in traffic. And Scotty, the number one player in the world, he needs to get to this tournament, or at least in his mind, he needs to get to this tournament to play, right? And so, you know, they had roadblocks and traffic was being held back. And he basically, as I understand it, tried to go around the roadblocks, didn't listen to the cops when they told him to stop, and basically got arrested, got put in handcuffs, got hauled off to jail. I think he got bailed out and then went to the tournament. I haven't looked yet, but, you know, it's just... you know, people often think golf is boring and it's just a bunch of, you know, boring conservative dudes in khakis and baseball hats. But, you know, a little excitement at the PGA tournament this year.
Yeah. What I gathered from it is probably perhaps a spin he's putting on it now after the fact is that he thought that was like, there was more of like an escort going on so that golfers could get to the tournament faster. And it wasn't until basically a cop was hanging from his car trying to get him to stop that he realized. But either way, good fun, a bit of madness. The combination of what went on with the Jerry Springer event at Congress, your plant dying, Scotty Scheffler, Roaring Kitty. It was definitely a good week to talk specifically about markets and less so the plumbing and functionality of markets, which we've done the last couple episodes. We'll cut it here. Everyone have a good weekend. We look forward to you joining us next week. And hopefully we can get back into talking about specifics and some market movements. We all love a bit of volatility, and maybe this is early signs that it's getting ready to return. You can find Brent on Twitter at SantiagoAUFun. You can find me at John Kutzmita, and you can find this show using the handle MilkshakesPod on both YouTube and on Twitter. And we've been having some fun sharing the madness on Twitter. So please find us there. All right, we'll see everyone real soon. Thanks so much.
You gonna stay with him?
I'm gonna stay with him.
We'll be back.
This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.